All right, we're going to go ahead and call to order the Tech Ridge Public Infrastructure District. I'm Michael Jensen with Snow, Jensen, and Reese. Today is March 21st, 2025, and it's 9:02 a.m. So for our call to order, if everyone on the call, if you could state your name for the recording and record, we'd appreciate it. We'll start with the board. Isaac, you're the chair. Do you want to start for us?
Yes. Sorry, it blanked out, so I didn't hear what she asked for.
Just your name for the recording and record.
Okay, Isaac Barlow.
David Nilsson.
Brad Buchanan.
Matt Ince with Snow, Jensen, and Reese District Council.
Jason Burningham. With LRB Public Finance Advisors, financial advisor to Tech Ridge PID.
This is Adam Daly with Gilmore Bell, serving as bond counsel to the district.
And you've got Ben Wilhelm from DA Davidson, underwriter for the bonds the district intends to issue.
Right, that's everyone I show. Oh, on the call, we do have public. Christy, do we have any members of the public there?
No.
Okay, thank you. All right, board. First item up is the meeting minutes from our February 10th board meeting. Have you guys had a chance to review those? Do you need me to put them up on the screen?
No, I've reviewed them.
Okay. Could I get a
We're
motion
good.
to approve?
I motion that we approve the board meeting minutes of February 10th, 2025.
Thanks, Dave.
A second.
Thanks, Brad. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
That is unanimous. All right. Next up is the bond resolution. And so I'm going to put that up and ask Adam if he would walk through it for us.
Yep. So this resolution accomplishes primarily two things. First, it authorizes the district to issue the bond subject to certain maximum parameters. In this case, the bonds may be issued in a maximum par amount of $48,990,000. They must mature within 31 years from the date of adoption of the resolution. They can only be sold at a maximum discount from par of 5%. And they must bear an interest rate that doesn't exceed 8%. The second thing that this resolution does is it approves forms of various documents that will be used in connection with the transaction. Under this resolution, that will include the indenture between the district and the bond trustee, the bond purchase agreement, the continuing disclosure agreement, and then a completion agreement and collateral assignment agreement, that will be with the developer. These documents can be amended and altered by the district board as they see fit prior to closing. And so this resolution will just approve the forms of these documents. And then the last thing here is on page 6, you'll see a notice of bonds to be issued. What we'll need here is the district board and district council to post this notice, similar to how the assessment ordinance and designation resolution were posted. So, electronically on the Utah Public Notice website, and then also physically posted within the district boundaries. Once this notice is posted, that will trigger a 30-day contestability period, after which there can't be a contest to anything contained within this resolution. So, I'll follow up by email after this with just this notice individually sent to the group.
So it's that first paragraph on page 6 that needs to be visible in the physical posting.
Yeah, it'll be everything on page 6 and page 7. Those two pages together constitute the notice. And then just one last note here. We will also have a separate resolution that'll be adopted at a subsequent meeting That will approve the form of the preliminary limited offering memorandum and the limited offering memorandum. So that's not included as one of the form of documents we're approving here, but that'll be done at a later date. Any questions about anything in this resolution?
Adam, the only question, this is Jason Burningham. The only question I had, I texted Brennan or Sam. I know Ben is on the line, but we have the maximum parameter set at 48,990. That is, I think, our most recent number run. That's where it is. My question is, does it make sense to include that maybe up to 50 million just to provide flexibility? And if so, is that flexibility provided in the governing document? I think there's up to 75 million that was allowable under the governing document. I just wonder if we wanted some flexibility. This would, in essence, authorize the district up to that amount. But if there were any more need for any more above that, just for a little bit of flexibility, we might want to consider $50 million.
Sure. So the one thing I'll add here, and I'm kind of coming into this transaction a little later, but so given that these are assessment bonds, we are limited by statute to 1/3 of the appraised value of the assessment area. And so, Ben, I don't know if you know this off the top of your head, but that 48,990 might be the maximum as the 1/3 of the appraised finished lot value here. And if so, that would constrain us to exactly that figure. But if the appraisal would allow for a larger amount, then we certainly could go up to 50 million. I just don't have that appraised finished lot value figure in front of me right now.
I think this does represent the 3-to-1 ratio based on prospective lot development and so forth. I can see that argument.
Yeah. And so that's the constraint here, is that statutory requirement.
Yeah, in agreement.
Okay, thanks for asking, Jace. Board, do you have any other questions?
Questions here.
Okay. Dave, are you good? Brad, you good?
So do we know that someone did that calculation and that's where that number came from? I mean, it's approximately, right? It's in the ballpark, in other words.
Yeah, what we typically do is we take the finished lot appraised value from the appraisal, and then we round to the nearest $10,000 mark.
I did not do the calculation, but that was my point. Just whether or not there is any flexibility. If there is, we'd want to go to the maximum. But I didn't run the calculation, so.
Yeah, good. I mean, I believe that this calculation has been done.
It looks let's go close. Back and
go ahead, Dave.
Well, I'm just pulling the appraisal up just for so we can.
I've got the number here. Yeah, it's 1,046,982,400.
Yeah, 146,982,400. Yeah, so.
Is that all of the property in the assessment area, Dave, without any exclusions? And sorry, I mean, Sam and Brennan may have had this conversation. I'm coming a little bit cold into the conversation right now. But presumably when we established the assessment ordinance, then we should have established what 1/3 of the finished lot value was at that point in time.
We would have.
If you're rounding to the nearest 10,000, you're rounding down to the nearest 10,000, then I think that's right. So the 146,982,400 divided by 3, so that's our 3-to-1.
Yep.
Put us at the 48,994.
Yep.
I guess that's a question. So the acreage on that is the full 130.93 acres, and I think we're only Well, technically that's, so technically that's not right, because we've carved out 17 acres that is not assessed, but it was part of the original assessment ordinance. So I don't know.
The value isn't, it doesn't directly include that, the net of the 17 acres or the excess of the 17 acres.
You'll recall.
Now, there's the value is based on the buildable pads within that 130 acres.
Right. So it doesn't change the value at all.
Okay.
You'll recall, Jason, we talked about that yesterday, and Darcy brought up that point. And I think there was a note specifically included in the appraisal also to indicate that that acreage was not included in the valuation.
Okay.
And then secondly, I'm looking at the assessment ordinance itself, and I think that the amounts in the assessment ordinance match with what Adam was showing in terms of the parameters. Just double checking. So I think we're fine.
Yeah, it does. It ties up the assessment ordinance, which is what we're looking for here.
Okay.
So that 49 million is the number that you are saying ties, right?
Exactly. That 48,990. Yep.
Yeah.
48,990. Okay.
And I just double checked that as well, Dave. So I think we're good.
Right.
All right. Are we ready to take a motion to approve the resolution, board?
Yes.
Do you want me I'll to make do
a,
it?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I'll make a motion to approve the bond resolution as presented.
Okay, thanks, Isaac.
I second.
Thanks, Dave. All those in favor say aye.
Yeah. Aye.
Aye.
That is unanimous. All right, that's everything I show on the agenda. Board, do you have anything for us? Anything, questions, anything you need from us?
Michael,
No.
I just wanted to ask, and first of all, say I apologize. I wasn't on the call tomorrow. I had a conflict that came up, but I know there was some discussion of the participation agreement. Did those questions all get resolved? Is there something we can do to help with that?
I'm trying to remember, Matt. I think we've had some questions on the participation agreement.
It was about some acreage, what was included, what wasn't, the boundaries. It was in that context that we had the discussion yesterday.
Yeah, and regarding, I'm putting together a schedule of each of those boundary definitions, as well as maps. And I think DA Davidson's also doing some maps, and we can match them up.
Okay. I think, Matt, specifically, there was an attachment to the participation agreement that wasn't consistent with the narrative. I think the narrative was clear that all 355 acres was included in the project area, and that the participant, in this case, Tech Ridge PID and Tech Ridge Management, were entitled to receive the tax increment off of all 355 acres. And then there was a map attached. I think the title of that map was Participant Project Area. And it seemed to maybe suggest or indicate that, you know, there was a sub portion of what the participant was eligible to receive. And so I think the map's an error. I think the map should include the full 355 acres, but that's what I recall yesterday we wondered about.
Yeah, and yeah. I look back, that it was the report that that Jason, that came out of your office, and it looks like someone there that had two maps in it. One was the correct one and one was not, and I think it just the wrong map got it attached.
Yeah, I agree. Looking at the text, I think it's clear that the agency share, which is what the incentive is based on, is based on the entire project area, not just the participant project area. So the participant receives the incentive based on the full project, not just on the participant project.
Do you think it does? Do you think we need to even change the map then, or is that just
I don't.
That's probably the question. Do we need to do anything with it, or do we just the language is clear too? I think.
Yeah, I don't know that we do. I mean, the exhibit described in the participation agreement, it actually describes that exhibit as the participant project, but the incentive it described is still based on the larger project. And I think the reason we did that is because the larger project is actually already described in the CDA, documentation. So
it's not an error. In other words, it just.
In my view, looking back at it, I don't think it is. I actually think it's correct. I understand how it could be a little confusing that it refers to a map that isn't the basis for the incentive. But I think if you look at the text and how it references the map, I do think it makes sense.
Okay.
But Jason, if you have, any lingering concerns about it, let's.
No, I think I don't. I think it just came up in our call yesterday, more of an observation, wondered if that was an error or somehow inferred something different than what we'd understood in the text. But I'll go back and look at it and read it again. But with that explanation, I think there were, it was probably not necessarily trying to tie to, well, this is the only area that you receive tax increment from. It was more to describe what the participant's going to be developing.
Exactly. More the area of use as the source of the incentive. Yeah.
We didn't talk about this yesterday, but we have talked about it previously. And I know between DA Davidson and LRB, we've been concerned about making sure that the city triggers the tax increment prior to our pricing the bonds. So we do think we need to follow up with Jamie and others at the city to kind of determine whether or not we can essentially have them trigger it now with the tax increment to start, at a date to, a specific date, but maybe not until the 2026 tax year or based on what our modeling is. But I think the concern is if we go to the market without this, because I don't believe that the participation agreement allows the PID to trigger it. It's still subject to the agency triggering it. So if we don't have that in place, I guess that's the concern. So I think we do need to maybe work on that as well, Matt. And we've got some suggestions on that. I think, that's something we could have them, send a letter to the county, county auditor, county assessor's office that it's triggered, but give a specific tax year trigger. So, it doesn't have to be triggered for 2025 tax year. It could be triggered next year or the following year, but we have to have certainty that it's going to be triggered before we price the bonds.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And that's the mechanism is just is it this city council that does it or just the.
It's the RDA. Yeah, it would be the RDA board. So I think what the interlocal agreements expressly require is some kind of written notification to the county that it's the, that they're triggering the tax increment collection period. So I could certainly work with Jamie on that or happy to, Matt, if you want to reach out to her and we can be part of that as well. But I don't think that's an obstacle, but I did notice in the participation agreement that, it's not like the PID has the option of just doing it when they want, and it'd be hard to go and issue bonds without that trigger in place.
Yeah, I'd be glad to reach out to Jamie, Jason, and copy you, and we can maybe trigger a conversation with her about that.
Okay.
Matt, feel free to include us. We have some forms for that, but I think it's mostly just looking at the participation agreement and following that with the city, right? It's going to tell you, let us know when you want to trigger and making a request. And then Jamie might want some help, but I think she's done this many times, Jason. She probably, you know, just needs the procedures of the participation agreement filed. But it's a good administrative thing to get done before we price. I very much agree.
And part of that, I know that DA Davidson and us are working on just the efficiency of the tax increment. And because we have capitalized interest, you know, I think depending on some of that discussion of when exactly we ought to trigger it, the interlocal agreements give a date certain, kind of the maximum period of time in the future with a maximum, you know, collection period through, I think it's 2055. But in terms of when it can be triggered, there's flexibility from now up until, I think it was 2026 or something like that. But we definitely have something in place there.
Yeah, and the city's participating in that TIF to pay for the East Access Road. So yeah, they would probably have an opinion about when it gets triggered.
Well, sounds like we need to trigger it right now so that we can price the bond with it triggered, right?
Yeah, I think,
I mean, I don't, there's there'll be no benefit of delay.
Well, there's two questions. Can you trigger it without triggering it with tax year 25 as the trigger date? Meaning, can they send that letter? Can they inform everyone that they're triggering it, but it will be effective as of tax year 26, which would mean next year for receipt of payment in the first part of fiscal year 2027? Or do we do it right now immediately, which, you know, the first tax increment would be available next first quarter of 2026. We do have capitalized interest on our bonds that carry us through, you know, some period of time.
Yeah, and I would be optimistic that can be handled, right? You formally state the trigger and just have the effective date to maximize your collection period.
Yeah, that's my thought, Randy. Unless you see any problems with that as a bond counsel, I think we've seen that in other cases where the effective date isn't right then, but they've triggered it for purposes of pledging revenues to the bond.
Agreed. Yep, I agree.
From the market's perspective, as long as investors know it's been triggered, I think we're fine. So we'll continue to work on the modeling.
Okay, good discussion. Anything else we need to bring up?
Nothing here.
All right. With nothing else, we could get a motion to adjourn then.
I motion we adjourn.
Thanks, Dave.
Seconded.
Thanks, Isaac. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right. Thanks, good everyone. To see everybody. Thanks.